Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arseblog 20 podcast series, in which we celebrate 20 years of Arseblog by talking to a guest about a calendar year of the site's existence between 2002 and 2022. This time around, the year is 2009, and my guest is Phil Costa. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going all right. It's going all right. How well do you remember 2009?
Well, I had to do a little bit of research, actually. I think I was 12 at the time, or 13.
You're
so you know, it was a while back.
Old here, making me feel very old here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was just heading into secondary school, so I'd probably been there for about a year, going into my second year at secondary school. So
right.
Yeah, I had to think back. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so in your thinking back, what's the first thing you've come across that you want to discuss?
Well, I mean, there was only one place for me to start, really, and that was with Arsenal's favourite small Russian, Andrei Arshavin,
right,
who gave us a very memorable January transfer deadline day.
Well, yeah, I mean, deadline day, and then the next day, and maybe the day after, I can't remember. It was a genuine saga, wasn't it? Because it stretched out over a period of time. I think we had to get special dispensation in the end to get the deal done. There were all kinds of things. I think James did a really good piece on this in The Athletic a while back. The nuts and bolts and everything, all the moving pieces behind this one were kind of crazy. Not to mention the fact that this was a January transfer window when pretty much everybody was saying, well, we've got to get a defender, or we've got to get a defensive midfielder in. We've got to add a bit of steel, a bit of backbone to this team. And Arsene Wenger, in the way that Arsene Wenger did, went a completely different direction.
Defenders, who needs them? Who needs them, huh? Yeah, I mean, I just remember being glued to Sky Sports News. I mean, it's crazy to think about how it's changed, how the whole kind of landscape for transfers has changed, because, you know, you got all the aggregators and the different news accounts on Twitter. But yeah, back then it was literally just kind of one, you know, one source, and that was it. It was Sky Sports and then it was Arsenal.com. So I just remember, yeah, it was, you know, really exciting for me because I remember obviously Euro 2008 was the summer before that transfer window. And I didn't really know anything about him because, you know, my football knowledge was not like it was now. I didn't really work in the field, or, you know, you're kind of limited to all of English football plus maybe Real Madrid and Barcelona. But I just remember watching him at Euro 2008 and thinking, like, who the hell is this guy? You know, he's absolutely tiny, you know, he's kind of funny, you know, with his facial expressions, but he just had such incredible technical quality and he was just fun. And, you know, he put in some incredible performances in that European Championship. And I was, you know, as soon as I sort of heard that Arsenal were looking at him or trying to sign him, I was just super excited. I mean, I've got it written down here that he was kind of the Ozil before the Ozil. And I just remember being glued to the TV thinking, will it happen? Won't it happen? And thankfully for us, it did.
Yeah, there was the interview, wasn't there, that where it was eventually done and he said, I am Gunnar. And, you know, yeah, we weren't quite sure what exactly we were going to get. But I think your point about him being a fun footballer is a really interesting one, because as the game becomes increasingly demanding in terms of the physical aspect of it, the mental aspect of it, the professionalism that players have to show, the dedication that's expected from them, you know, and this is not just about Arsenal, but I think across professional football, when you get to the really, really top level, there are demands on players, which I think increasingly mean you see fewer characters. But he was a real character. I don't think he necessarily... I mean, I can probably quite categorically say that he didn't look after himself as well as other players might have, right? There were certain physical aspects to him. Like, I remember one game where it was the end of it and he pulled up his shirt at the end of it, as they do. You know, he either took his shirt off or he pulled it up and it was like, holy shit, that's like me at the end of five-a-side game. You know, I'm not...
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, not saying I'm... giant haystacks, but I'm not a finely tuned athlete with the whole 0% body fat like lots of them. But there was that element to him which was like, I know what I can do with the ball, give me the ball and I'll do some stuff with it and it'll be great. And other days, you know, the game will pass me by. But it's an interesting thing to think about now as we move into this hyper-professional era, and certainly under Mikel Arteta, the demands that he would place on a player maybe seem at odds with the kind of character and player that Arshavin was.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's what you said. He was just a quirky kind of guy. I mean, there was that also that clip of him. I think he was coming off the bench against Stoke and he was still wearing his hat.
Yeah.
And then Arsene Wenger had to quickly jump up from the bench and just nip it off him. And, you know, I mean, we know he used to like a McDonald's as well. And, you know, But it just took me back to Arsenal being a really fun team. I mean, obviously, you know, they used to frustrate us in equal measure. I mean, there were defensive calamities and, you know, they'll frustrate us on a weekly basis. But, you know, looking back now, I just think, you know, we had people like Cesc Fabregas, Thomas Rosicky, Samir Nasri was also at the club. I think he just joined. And it was just like, man, we had such a fun... like stacked attacking side, and it was like, wow, you know, because especially after the kind of sufferings that we've had to deal with over the last, I don't know, 18 months, I know it's improved now, but you know, we were just so lucky to kind of have those guys all there together. And
yeah,
I mean, you know, it's crazy to think that he was our then record signing. I think at 16 million, I think he just overtook Jose Antonio Reyes. So, you know, how times have changed. But yeah, just seeing him come out the doors at a snowy Emirates stadium and give a little soundbite in broken English, you know, I was hooked. I was hooked already. And he's just one of those players that gets you into the stadium, basically. And, you know, having watched him play incredibly well at Euro 2008, I was just desperate to see his little shush celebration at the Emirates. And thankfully I did see it not too long after he signed.
Yeah, I mean, the shush celebration in particular was evident at Anfield, wasn't it? That incredible game where he scored four goals and amazingly still didn't end up on the winning side. I mean, imagine doing that. Imagine scoring four goals at Anfield and not winning the game. It must be a real kick in the teeth for a player, for a team, you know, particularly I think that last Liverpool equaliser was really, really late. But the quality of the goals that he scored, and look, we had a bit of a laugh about his physical condition, which I think was an issue over time, certainly. But that fourth goal, when they had a corner and Theo Walcott broke, and all of a sudden the guy keeping pace with him, running from deep, sprinting to fire home that fourth goal, was Arshavin. And, you know, as we know, Theo Walcott was no slouch.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he was just kind of jinky and janky. Like, he could go left and right really quickly. I really loved how he could use both feet. He was kind of Cazorla-esque in that kind of way. As you know, as exemplified by that fourth goal, you know, the finish straight past Pepe Reina. What I also really liked about him was the no backlift. You know, he could just fire off these missiles from, you know, he just seemed to take no time to wind up at all. And then all of a sudden they'd be straight into the top corner. So, you know, I just really loved his kind of way of playing. And, you know, obviously he had the kind of nice technical qualities, but he also had some brute and some power, which you wouldn't normally associate with a player of that size. And, you know, I remember being at the stadium when he scored I think it was his first goal against Blackburn, when he was kind of on the left touchline. He took it to the byline. He just completely sold the defender with this dummy, and then like curled it into the roof of the net. And it was right by the corner where I sit, where my family has season tickets. And, you know, it was just one of those goals that you leave the stadium and you're like, wow, I was really lucky to be there to see that, because, you know, it was just a moment of such individual class and quality, and you know, that's why you go and watch football. That's why you're in the stadium. And, you know, obviously it didn't quite work out as we would have hoped with Arshavin, but I think for maybe a year, 18 months after he joined, he was just so good. And yeah, he'll always, you know, hold a place in my heart for that time he spent at the club.
All right. Yeah. I've got fond memories of him, and not least because he was a character on the Arsecast for so many years. I think there was a lot to like about, you know, when he was good, he was really, really good. He was, you know, a bit infuriating when he wasn't. And that lack of physical stuff was a bit of an issue at times. But yeah, I think when you think back to him, you know, even some of the pictures, wasn't there a picture where he's like, with a bouet and they're dressed in 70s gear, and there's another one where he's like to advertise the sleep on the pitch for the junior gunners, he's like in a scout uniform in a tent, and he looks about 12 years of age, you know. Pretty amazing, really. All right, where are we going next?
Well, I've kind of kept it in chronological order here, and then I've gone for the Eduardo goal against Burnley. I actually forgot about this one. And then I just quickly before coming onto the podcast, I thought about it and I was like, was that 2009? Lo and behold, it was. And I just, yeah, I mean, what an incredible goal. You know, I mean, obviously we'll talk about it a bit more, but I just have such sort of hard feelings about how his whole time with Arsenal went. And it's pretty difficult to escape the talking about the moment that it all seemed to unravel. But in terms of the goal itself, I mean, in terms of pure technique, I mean, this is genuinely probably one of the top three moments that the Emirates have seen in terms of isolated moments of technique. I think for me anyway, I don't know if, you know, others might have different ideas, but I just thought, wow, what an incredible, incredible goal.
I suppose we should explain the goal to put that in context, because it's not the kind of goal you see very often. It's, I suppose, in some way up there with, like, the Wilshere goal against Norwich was very much a team goal, right? But you don't really see that goal very often, even though Arsenal scored quite a similar one. I think Thomas Rosicki scored quite a similar one. But that kind of one-touch perfection, normally one of those little flicks doesn't come off and the move breaks down and everyone, you know, carries on. It didn't with the Wilshere one. This was a little chip ball from Alex Song to Eduardo, who... Did he take a touch and volley it, or did he volley it straight?
No, straight volleyed. Yeah, it was a classic, you know, Alex Song little dink over the top. And, you know, he'd peeled off the last man and you just think, okay, he's going to bring it down and put it into the corner. But the technique was, I don't even know how to explain it. It was like off the kind of the heel, the outside of his heel, and it just flew into the top corner. And it's kind of like the Aaron Ramsey goal against Galatasaray when you're watching it and you think, how did that even happen? Like, where's the power coming from? The whole mechanism is wrong. You shouldn't be able to get a strike like that off into the corner with so much power and accuracy, but he's done it. And it was just, you know, it's just like, it's the classic moment at the Emirates when you can hear the crowd going, wow, like when they hear that, when they see the replay on the screen, you know. And it was just, you know, after such a horrible year for him, you know, it was almost a year exactly to the date after he broke his leg, or had his leg broken, shall I say. You know, it just to be captaining the side, to score a goal like that, it must have been a huge kind of weight off his shoulders and off his mind.
Yeah, amazing. We'll put a link to this goal in the show notes for this particular episode. You can have a look at it. But it reminds me, I've just watched it again, it reminds me a little bit of a tennis shot, almost like a backhand tennis shot where they take some of the pace off it, but the trajectory of the ball goes, it's just unbelievable. Like a slicer with the outside of his left foot as he's moving the other way. An amazing goal. And, yeah, we talked about the injury on a previous episode, but it's hard not to think about what could have been for Eduardo at Arsenal, because, you know, when he signed, nobody had any idea who he was. He came in, took a little while to get going, and all of a sudden he was working well with Bentner, and he was working well with Adebayor, and then he got those injuries and it all fell apart a bit. And I think while we're talking about him, we should talk about something else that happened in 2009 with Eduardo. In the second half of the year, in the 2009-2010 season, he won a penalty against Celtic, if you remember. And there was...
I was at the game.
Unbelievable uproar. And it's put me in mind of the Arsenal celebrating against Wolves, of Arsenal postponing games, how other teams and other players do things. But when it's Arsenal, the reaction is somehow bigger and greater. And it might be that we're more aware of it, we're living in it. But I don't ever remember a player banned for two games by UEFA for diving. And it was one of those where he went down maybe a little bit easily, but I think you can accept when a guy's had his leg and ankle snapped in two by a brutal challenge, you know, he might be a little bit circumspect. He might want to get off his feet to ensure that an injury like that doesn't happen. And there was a media witch hunt, and Eduardo was called a diver, and UEFA, they literally banned him for two games before Arsenal appealed, and it was overturned. Like, I've never seen that happen before or since.
No. I mean, it was, you know, we just have to go back a few years for the previous example, which was Robert Pires. You know, nobody else has ever dived in English football apart from Robert Pires, apparently. So it's just, I mean, he was a striker trying to win a penalty. He's going away from goal. You leave a leg, the goalie hits you, you go down.
Yeah.
And we see this every week in the Premier League, you know, and
in every league in Europe. Exactly.
Yeah. And people like Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney, they used to make a living out of doing this. But obviously the Arsenal microscope, I don't know what it is. We're like a magnet to this stuff. I don't even know why, but yeah, I was actually at the game and we didn't realize what had really happened because, you know, back then we couldn't go on Twitter and look what everybody was saying.
Yeah.
And it was only until we got back into the car and was like listening to all the reaction on like Five Live or, you know, one of the radio shows afterwards. And it was like, what the hell is happening here? You know, it was, you know, people calling in, frothing at the mouth, talking about how they've cheated Celtic out of a chance to be in Champions League. And crazy.
I think it was because it was against the British team. I genuinely think that played a part.
Yeah,
like, I think if Eduardo had dived against a Turkish team or a Spanish team, I don't think there would have been anywhere close to the hysteria. And I think, look, certainly the fact that Celtic is in Scotland and it's the media landscape is not dissimilar and you're getting stuff on the phone-ins, Five Live, et cetera, there are a lot of Celtic fans living in England and who are at that game. So I think that drove some of it. Nevertheless, it was so over the top. But there you go. That's just the life and times of an Arsenal fan, I think.
Indeed. You know, we're used to it by now.
Yeah, so. We sure are. We sure are. Okay, what's next?
Oh, unfortunately, Andrew, the next one's still a soft one for me. And it's the Champions League semi-final defeat to Manchester United in the Champions League.
Do you remember the build-up to this game?
Honestly, I just remember us being battered in the first game. Or were we battered? Maybe not battered, but, you know, they were much better than us on the day, I think. And there was a real sense of kind of, wow, we're still in this.
Yeah, it was only 1-0 in the first leg. Yeah.
And, you know, it was just one of those classic Champions League nights in the summer. You know, it's still not dark yet, you know, and the crowd are there after work. People have had a drink and there's like, you know, it's the perfect atmosphere to, you know, we're a goal down. Let's go in and get a goal and see what we can do. And then after 11 minutes, it was the dream had died.
I remember well just what the build-up was like to that. And I completely understand it because it was just 1-0. We'd lost away from home 1-0. So we're at home and you're building. And this is a Champions League semi-final in 2009. We've been to the final in 2006. And you're thinking, well, this is a strong United team, of course. We know it was a strong United team and the players that they had, the quality that they had. And probably the final, given the way it played out, would have been a game too far for us anyway.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
But yeah. I remember the club had, did they give everyone flags, or there was, you know, they did a lot at a time where they, you know, this kind of thing wasn't necessarily commonplace. Maybe it's because we weren't playing games that demanded that kind of build-up. But I remember the anticipation and the hope and the optimism. And like you say, it was a beautiful sunny evening. And within 6-7 minutes, Kieran Gibbs slipped, and I think it was Park scored.
7 minutes, yeah, he slipped.
And
yeah.
Then there was the Ronaldo free kick, which I'm very happy that Manuel Almunia is having a nice life out in Dubai. And, you know, he's recovered from his heart problem and all of that kind of stuff. But holy shit, in a European semi-final to let in a free kick from 40 yards when it was well hit, but like, come on, man, you've got to save that. You've got to save that.
Yeah, I mean, he was already on the naughty list for 2006 when he let that shot from Belletti squirm through him. And then we see this on home soil and it's just like, you know, when he was, I remember watching it was on ITV Sport. I wasn't at the game for this one, but it was on ITV Sport. And then I think it was Clive Tilsley was, you know, he's not going to shoot from here, is he? And you can see him do like that stupid routine where he takes the steps back and he does that deep exhalation. And you're like, oh, come on, mate, leave it out. And then you see it arrowing towards goal and you're like, you know, he struck it well, but come on, I don't understand how you've let that squirm into your near post. You know, it's like, and it was just such a deflation for everybody. I mean, the players, the fans, you know, Arsene Wenger sunk a little bit in his chair and it was, you know, it wasn't just that we were losing. It was 3-0, two away goals on the night for them. Ugh, and it was just, you know, all this build up, all this excitement to try and get back into the game and it's done within 11 minutes. So you're just sleepwalking through the rest of the game, you know. Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible.
Oh, I know, I know. It was painful, that one in particular. It ended up 3-1 to United on the night. Ronaldo got another, Van Persie got a sort of consolation penalty, but yeah.
I mean, to be fair, their third goal was amazing. I mean, we were pushing players forward, but the way they just killed us on the break was, you know, they had an incredible team then. And we were obviously a young side. I mean, Kieran Gibbs slipping is obviously not what you want for a young player who's just beginning to establish himself in the side. But yeah, I mean, even the first goal, accidents happen, right?
Yeah.
Two goals, it's not completely... we're not completely out of the game by then, but then just, yeah, the third goal going in those kind of circumstances, it was just, yeah, so deflating. And one of the, you know, a real, probably after the final and after Wayne Bridge scoring at Highbury, it's probably one of my worst Arsenal memories in Europe.
Yeah, I can go with that. That's for sure. I mean, there've been some pretty bad ones in Europe down the years, it's fair to say.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, they've been more like humiliations, haven't they? So as opposed to, you know, I really felt that we could get something from that game and then it was just snatched away from me, you know, in 10 minutes. So
yeah.
But what can you do? I mean, it happens. But yeah, that moment of Almunia just letting it go through his gloves will haunt me for a long time, I think.
Yeah, he really did have his moments, Manuel, but we won't dwell on those. We'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere else happier, or not really, maybe. this is the start of the 2009-10 season. And we'd actually started quite well. We won both of our opening two games. I mean, obviously, that was that big win at Goodison Park. And then, yes, things unraveled slightly. And we are at the Etihad Stadium, and our good friend Emmanuel Adebayor has ran all of 80 yards to go and celebrate in front of the Arsenal fans when Man City are about to beat us away from home.
Yeah.
And I think many people would have seen their veins bulging in the side of their foreheads in those few seconds.
Yeah, it was a mad one because, look, it had been a bit contentious with Adebayor. You know, he had a period where he was unbelievable, really. He was unplayable. Mm-hmm. He was banging them in. He was heading them in. He was sticking them top corner. He was taking them on his chest and whacking them in, you know, 30-odd goals. And look, that summer, Arsenal sold Adebayor and Kolo Touré to Manchester mm-hmm. City for about 40 million or so in total. But, you know, I always felt that, look, I think the Arsenal fans, everyone loves a pantomime villain in football, right? It's part and parcel of it. A guy comes over to celebrate, he used to play for you, you give him the wanker signs or whatever it might be. There's a brilliant picture, actually, of Adebayor kneeling in front of the Arsenal fans, and there's just so many fucking furious guys, and they're climbing over each other to try and get down over the stewards as if, you know, they're going to get on the pitch and whack him. And my friend Tony is there in the picture, and he's just laughing his head off. He's the only guy in that picture actually laughing at Adebayor. But, you know, it's I always felt like whatever you think about the fans or the club or whatever it was disrespectful to a man in Arsene Wenger who brought him in from Monaco. Am I right?
He came from Monaco. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and really put him on a stage where, you know, he got that big move to Man City, and he got that crazy salary, and then he got his move to Real Madrid or wherever. Oh God, he ended up at Tottenham as well. So, you know, it wasn't all the way up. It was up and then some way down. But, you know, it felt disrespectful to Wenger, because Wenger had given him this opportunity and had always, you know, backed him and everything else. So, yeah, hell of a moment though.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we often forget that players are human beings as well, and they're easily susceptible to the odd moment of emotion and everything like that. But this was just kind of way beyond that. I mean, to go all the way to the other end and celebrate, I mean, that's obviously something he'd thought about. And he's not stupid. He would have known what he would have done. But yeah, I just thought the whole moment was just extremely unsavory. And like you said, Arsene Wenger brought him to English football, not only gave him the opportunity to play on a bigger stage, but improved him as a footballer, you know, incredibly. Yeah. I mean, we all kind of saw the potential when he first arrived, but no one, you know, I mean, he was one of the best strikers in Europe by the time he left Arsenal. So, yeah. You know, it was just a really sour moment. And always with Adebayor, you know, there's two sides to every story, but I think the ease in which Wenger was ready to bin him off says everything. I think there was a lot of sort of misleading behavior going on behind the scenes. And I'm going to stay. I want more money. I'm going to stay. And I just think Wenger had kind of no time for that. And, you know, it's just a shame, because, you know, Arsenal get made the joke out of this situation. You know, even though Adebayor was punished and everything, you know, it's a sort of an example of someone trolling Arsenal again. And then after we've lost key players in the past, and it was just that kind of narrative hurt us for a while. And, you know, it was, yeah, an incredible moment, really. I mean, the game was a disappointing defeat on the day. I think it was 4-2 we lost. Yeah. And I just remember watching it with my dad on a really terrible stream.
The early days of streaming.
And I think by the time he scored, my dad just switched it off and was like, right, we're going shopping. You know, that was it. He'd seen enough. So, but yeah, I mean, it was one of those kind of crazy moments that nobody forgets. But obviously when you're on the receiving end of it, you'd rather not remember it again. But yeah, I just... you could see the adrenaline pumping through him.
Yeah.
He did. And I think
go on. Sorry to
cut across. No. I think the knee slide would have taken him into the stands if he didn't stop before then. So, but yeah, just a shame how it all ended, but, what a moment, like you said.
And he did a stamp on Van Persie as well in the game,
indeed,
which could well have been sent off. I would say, like, nowadays you'd be sent off for that. But of course, we know that that's not the case if you stamp on the face of an Arsenal player, as this season has shown us, you know? I think we've forgotten kind of in the mists of time just how annoying that summer was, and all the talk about where he was going to go and his agent this and his agent that. And it was all playing out in the media, and, you know, he was... Public Enemy number one for a little while. Just before we move on to the final thing, I found this, which I thought was quite funny. It goes back, it's related to Strikers, but it goes back to the Champions League semi-final defeat. This is an article, I'm going to read it word for word. This is an article that was on the official Arsenal website.
Okay, go on.
Nicholas Bentner has been fined by the club for his behaviour after Tuesday night's Champions League semi-final defeat against Manchester United. The Danish striker, who came on after 63 minutes of the 3-1 reverse, was photographed leaving a nightclub in the early hours of Wednesday morning with his jeans pulled down. At Friday's pre-match press conference, when asked if he was disappointed by Bentner's actions, Arsene Wenger's response was firm. "Yes," the manager said. "It was not acceptable, and he has been fined by the club."
Oh, Nicholas.
What a boy.
Oh, what Nicholas. Boy. I mean, that's a whole other podcast in itself, so maybe I'll save that one for yeah, you to we'll dive into another day.
All right, we've got one more moment from this year to get into, so let's have it.
Yeah, go on. We'll finish on a good note. Yeah. We'll finish on a nice one. The big North London derby win over Spurs. With the classic Fabregas goal that nobody saw on TV.
Oh yeah,
yeah. What a day that was, and I think it pretty much confirmed my love for Cesc in every way imaginable. Like I didn't love him already enough before.
Yeah, I mean it was incredible. You will have to describe it from a TV perspective because I was in the ground. I was there. I was watching that game, and Van Persie had scored, and we were still celebrating when they kicked off, and all of a sudden Fabregas was running through on goal and took a touch around somebody else, and just slotted the ball into the bottom corner, and it was mayhem. Mayhem at limbs, as they might say these days, but it genuinely was. People were going absolutely crazy. They were going falling over 3-4 rows to hug people and all of that kind of stuff. It was absolute pandemonium. I know how to say it in the stadium. But that moment, it must have been slightly surreal on TV where you're going, hey, hang on a minute. What?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what it was, because Van Persie had just scored, you know, that really nice goal at the front post, you know, kind of stabbed it home. I think it was Sanya crossing the ball in.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing the usual stuff on Sky, the replays, Andy Gray's talking about it. And then all of a sudden you just hear the crowd like, wah, wah. And then it was like, and they're through again. It's Fabregas. And then you just see him shoot into the bottom corner. They just got there in time for the shot.
Yeah.
And it was like, they've scored again. And then he just runs straight into the Arsenal fans. And it was like, what the hell's happened here? Like, I've just finished celebrating the first one. And Fabregas is already, you know, diving into the Arsenal fans into the corner. And it, you know, you could, it was one of those goals where you can really hear and feel the emotion on TV. Mm. You know, there's just a little something extra. I mean, always with a North London derby, there's added kind of bite in the stands. But
sure,
you could feel the noise and you could hear the noise. And wow, just a really incredible moment. And actually, what I always loved about Fabregas, you know, yeah, I know he's a soft spot for a lot of people. But I really loved how he used to celebrate his goals, because you could really, especially in the big games, you could really feel like they meant something to him.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, he just had his eyes closed, arms out, you know, and running straight into the Arsenal fans. And it was just, what an incredible moment, you know, to score a goal like that in a North London derby. I mean, that is the dream of millions of people, and he's just done it there, you know, going past those two Humpty Dumpties in the Spurs midfield who just clearly didn't wake up yet after the whistle.
Yeah.
And yeah, just a super incredible moment. And I think it's, you know, I've got here written down, it was probably God balancing things out, because I was there at Highbury when Reyes scored that goal against Middlesbrough, which was also missed on TV.
Yeah.
So I think that was just, yeah, him balancing out the score a bit there. So, you know, I'll take it. It's not something I'll give him stick for, but yeah, no. just the noise and everything about that goal and the occasion. I mean, we won comfortably in the end. So Just a lovely moment for all Arsenal fans and for Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah, and just to remind ourselves, the two Humpty Dumpties in the Spurs midfield that day were Tom Huddlestone and Jermaine Genus. So if that makes it sweeter for everybody, then have at it. Yeah, I mean, an amazing goal. Truly just one of those moments that you never forget. You know, a lot happens in football. You've 38 league games a season, cup games, European games. There's a lot goes on in all of those games, even some of the most boring ones, but there are certain memories that just become etched into your consciousness when you think about the club, players, big moments, big games, and that was certainly one of them for me, and I'm sure it is for you and a lot of people listening.
Yeah, and I mean, it's what you said as well. There was like, it's those moments where you just find the closest person and you hug them. You know, it could be, you know, someone you've never met before in your life, and you just all of a sudden you're embracing them like you've known them for 25 years. And, you know, it's so lovely to get lost in those kind of moments over a shared connection, you know, with people. And I think that was lost a lot during the pandemic. So I'm really glad to be able to hopefully experience that again. I haven't been to Arsenal since the pandemic, actually. So
yeah,
that's the moment I'm looking forward to next. Just going there and hugging whoever's standing next to me.
God love them. Let's hope it's a hug of pure joy and celebration as we win a game late on. Maybe a North London derby, something like that. Oh, that would be
nice.
Don't
tempt me. Don't tempt me, Andrew.
All right. Well, look, on that particularly high and enjoyable note, we'll leave it there. Phil, that was 2009, and thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks so much for having me.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Phil is on Twitter @_PhilCosta, @_PhilCosta. Thank you very much indeed to him for looking back at 2009. This is the 8th episode in a row that I've recorded these outros for, and I'm finding it more and more difficult to think of something new to say. I shudder to think what it's going to be like by the time I get to 2022. But hey, we've got a way to go yet. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.